está manifestando, hay una situación de calma, pero toda esta idea de reconocer, por ejemplo, como presidente a Guaidó de la Asamblea Nacional, es tan absurda como cuando en su momento el gobierno de Estados Unidos, que persiste en cometer los mismos errores, desconocía, por ejemplo, la existencia de Vietcong en la guerra de Vietnam, y después resultó que fue derrotado en Vietnam. O cuando el gobierno de Estados Unidos promovió el golpe de Estado contra Yanukovych, Víctor Yanukovych en Ucrania, ¿verdad? O sea, es la misma maniobra, lo que hacen siempre, a veces les sale, otras veces no. Pero en el caso venezolano se encuentra con una resistencia muy, muy grande y no les va a ser para nada fácil. Tú puedes decir que la ley de gravedad ya no existe más, Trump o Mike Pence pueden decir de que el chavismo ya se ha caído o que está terminado, pero la realidad termina por imponerse finalmente, ¿verdad?
Atilio, usted pone de ejemplo, en este caso, la situación de la guerra en Vietnam, también lo que sucedió en Ucrania. ¿Espera Venezuela un escenario bélico de estas magnitudes?
Mira, yo creo que algunos de los halcones en los Estados Unidos, alguna de la gente más salvaje dentro de ese gobierno, tienen ahí la ilusión de un ataque militar a través de proxies, como se llama, a través de Colombia o de Panamá, hacer alguna operación de ese tipo, o tal vez movilizando parte de la OTAN, ¿no es cierto?, que tiene bases militares en Aruba y Curazao. Pero el contexto internacional en este momento no favorece esos planes. El mundo ha cambiado mucho, ¿verdad? Se ha producido una redistribución del poder mundial, del poder no solo económico, ¿verdad?, hablando de China, del poder militar y el poder político. Entonces, en este momento me parece a mí que una aventura militar de ese tipo llevaría a los Estados Unidos a sufrir una segunda gran derrota en América. La primera la tuvieron cuando invadieron Cuba, ¿no es cierto?, en Playa Girón, y fueron ampliamente derrotados, y eso finalmente costó el asesinato del presidente John F. Kennedy. Así que yo creo que Trump, que no es tonto, ¿verdad?, debe estar midiendo muy bien sus pasos, más allá del entusiasmo que pueda a veces suscitar en la oposición venezolana alguna de sus manifestaciones más grandilocuentes. No por casualidad fue Mike Pence, que es un personaje al cual Donald Trump ha maltratado de una manera fenomenal. Yo te invito a que miren lo que fue la campaña de las primarias del Partido Republicano. Las cosas que Trump le decía a Pence eran increíbles. Y sin embargo, Pence está ahí ahora como vicepresidente. ¿Qué gravitación puede tener un personaje como ese? No sé. Pero además, saben muy bien, Venezuela no está desarmada, tiene un pueblo movilizado, un pueblo organizado. Y acá hay una premisa fundamental. Estados Unidos solo ataca a países destruidos o debilitados militar y económicamente. Venezuela tiene problemas económicos, pero tiene inmensos recursos. Un país que tiene petróleo, tiene oro, tiene coltan, tiene litio, tiene de todo. Entonces va a ser muy difícil que ellos se quieran meter ahí impunemente sin que nadie salga a defenderlos.
Era el politólogo argentino Atilio Borón hablando ante el micrófono de Aliana Nieves. Terminamos esta edición del informativo Pacífica con las voces del vicepresidente Michael Pence tranquilizando al pueblo venezolano y la del ex primer mandatario Barack Obama con un mensaje de tranquilidad al pueblo libio.
Hola, I'm Mike Pence.
Assalamu alaikum.
Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power.
Muammar Gaddafi has lost legitimacy to lead, and he must leave.
On behalf of the American people, we say to all the good people of Venezuela, estamos con ustedes.
We will now stand with you in your struggle to realize the peace and prosperity that freedom can bring.
Let me express the unwavering support of the United States.
In this effort, you will have a friend and partner in the United States of America.
We will stay with you until democracy is restored and you reclaim your birthright of libertad.
And the aspirations of the Libyan people for freedom, democracy, and dignity must be met.
We are standing with the people of Libya.
We are with you. We stand with you.
Al concluir la destrucción de Libia, se desintegró el país norafricano, se restauró la compraventa de esclavos y se amplió la presencia de terroristas. El pueblo libio también perdió el estilo de vida más alto de África, el control de sus recursos naturales y una coalición de naciones extranjeras decide quién se queda con el petróleo. Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Needs to happen real soon. You got to save free radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org. Or you could send mail to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061.
Ve tú, consumidor, dime por qué no quieres saber que la mierda que vas a comer es solo mierda.
¡Comemos clase! Es muy rentable una fábrica de carne, montones afilados de animales alimentados con plantas mutantes con fármacos y hormonas. La tierra ya no se cultiva, se traduce, necesita, se envenena y se fumiga. Todos los toxicos que traga la tierra los esconderá. Día que logren darle buen sabor a la mierda, la comercializarán hamburguesas de mierda de un euro. Que es mierda, la sangre eras consumidor. Consciente, propinas de tus experimentos. No compres con tu dinero un mundo enfermo. Consumidor, consciente, propinas de tus experimentos. No compres con tu dinero un mundo enfermo. Todos los químicos devoran tu cuerpo, corrompen tus genes y la sangre te envenena. No les importa pagar ese precio para aumentar su riqueza. Su industria se globaliza, explota la red de su carne sanita. Sus negocios aumentan la hereda, una tierra que agoniza.
And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the January 24th, 2019 edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides with me, Robert Norris. I'm your host. Wish you could call in, but we haven't got a studio. If you want to help us find one, you get a reward of $300 if you can find us a place for a year, 10 by 10 space, access to electricity and internet. Give me a call at 423-4833. And let me know. Give me a tip, and you might get a tip back. My number again, 423-4833. That's also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a civil rights group that has been clanking around for quite a while. And, well, you'll be hearing more about us during this broadcast and more about upcoming concerns around such things as the Ross homeless encampment, the demand to open bathrooms citywide, 24-hour and otherwise. And we'll be looking back on the shitty council meeting. Yes, I do regard it as a shitty city council meeting that happened on Tuesday in spite of the so-called progressive majority. There's going to be lots of stuff, so don't go away. And, well, you'll hear.
I'm tired of moon songs of... I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So we now turn to the last city council meeting, which was 2 days ago, Tuesday the 22nd. This was really the second meeting of the new, full meeting of the new city council, which supposedly is progressives, you know, Brown and Crone, who are the leftovers from the last council, combining with Cummins and Glover. And, you know, we had hoped, I hadn't hoped, but there was hope among some that we would see some nice progressive activity. And there were some small indications of that, but only after enthusiastic, or should we say angry response from the crowd to the behavior of the mayor, who is not a progressive. That's Martin Watkins, who leads the minority, Matthews, and the other council member, Donna Myers, who unfortunately are often joined or occasionally joined by Cummins, who at least was billed as a progressive and was one of the two winning candidates in the last election. We'll see, you know, how that plays out. But for me, the issues were procedural to some extent, and it may not be that important. I mean, I've made a lot of fuss about the fact they've cut back oral communications, which is the small period of time when you can actually bring up items that are not on the agenda, that are important, that the council studiously ignores for most of the year and most of the decades, actually. Usually homeless matters that they don't really want to discuss, or police abuse matters that they certainly don't want to discuss. Or, I don't know, developer and corporate crime, which it never really makes it onto the city council agenda. But in any case, it used to get 3 minutes and 5 minutes, and it used to happen at the beginning of the evening session. Now, this city council did make a rule change back in, early January, that there would be a change to the 7 o'clock session. But with Cummins voting against it, joining the conservative majority, they did not vote essentially to extend time so that people could actually get in more time to speak, as has been the case with the Board of Supervisors. You speak for there's a limited period of time when homeless people, well, and anybody, I speak mostly about homeless people, so they are uppermost in my mind often, or at least in my mouth, more than in my mind. At the supervisors, you have an early oral communication period running from 9 to, I don't know if it's 10 or slightly less, but if there are more speakers, then can use the 3 minutes per speaker that they give people at Board of Supervisors, at least they did the last time I was there, which was some years ago, actually, then at 4 o'clock, you can come back and speak then, and you would still be able to say your piece to the, presumably the media, that which media remain, and to the wise and well-paid Board of Supervisors, whom I often call stupid vipers because of a similar disregard as often people in positions of power have for those who are poor and outside and not in a privileged status, i.e. not able to make the large campaign contributions that make all the difference in getting into office. Or just maybe of a different class, so that they aren't really seen and recognized as full people. They're not understood, they're not acknowledged, they're not respected. They don't count. In any case, the idea was for the city council to at least adopt the minimum standard of the Board of Supervisors. Cummins voted against that at the first January meeting, but oral communications was moved to 7, and you're now going to hear that oral communications period. However, Martin Watkins insisted on limiting oral communications to 2 minutes each, in which he then later dropped to 1 minute each, and then cut off before the last speaker could speak, short of the 30-minute period when people would be allowed to speak. That was the understanding I had when I looked at the time later, and this was a woman who I was standing next to in line, a Huff member, I have to admit, but someone that I hadn't coached or brought to the council, who came of her own accord to speak about issues. And Watkins wouldn't let her talk because she had a delegation of Japanese sister city folks outside that she wanted to laud and celebrate and welcome, and she just couldn't allow that last speaker to speak, which kind of typifies, I think, her attitude, which it sort of smacked me as of, I think she comes from a school teacher background. Maybe I'm wrong about this. And I was reminded in any case of a teacher disciplining 10-year-olds in a class as to how they should behave and sort of doing the nanny thing with them as though they weren't the constituents, they weren't the voters. In any case, let's listen to some of the oral communications. There was a similar reduction of time on the very important issue of just eviction protections, which, of course, have been sidelined by the city council, again, with Cummins moving to join the conservative majority until the next meeting. Actually, both Cummins and, I think, Crone agreed to table this, the issue of the just eviction protection second reading, which would kind of present at least on paper protections for tenants who are being evicted, but as has been pointed out by some activists, without much enforcement. It would still, however, be something that could presumably be endorsed and strengthened by city council and might give pause to landlords. But it was forestalled by the threat of recall and referendum, which is, of course, a powerful incentive or a disincentive to proceed in a just fashion and fulfill the dictates of the constituency that voted you in. In any case, in that item 24, the last item before the 7 o'clock oral communications, Mayor Watkins, who I was calling Mincemeat Martine, because she made mincemeat of the speakers, not only did she give them only 1 minute, many of them, and then only 2 minutes for the public hearings. And in the past, public hearings, and I'm talking about some years back, not under Terrazas and not under Matthews, people got 3 minutes, well, possibly under Matthews, during public hearings on laws. Those are important matters that are relatively permanent changes. And they give a little more deference, even though I think it's largely symbolic deference, to members of the community on those issues. They let them talk for slightly longer. And that's been the case. But, of course, not under the Conservative Council, which you might say has been less hypocritical. We're not going to listen to you, and we're not going to pretend we're listening to you. Or we'll pretend we're listening to you, but for a smaller period of time. So move in, make your comment, and please move on. Well, Watkins has been particularly abrupt in cutting people off, I suppose using the pretext that she's being equally abusive to everyone, and therefore that's the fair way to go. Of course, she isn't abusive to the staff, who gets lots of time to talk, and she, well, that, of course, is one of the main problems in Santa Cruz, is the staff, that the new city council majority could possibly address, but we'll see if they do. I mean, they could fire the city manager in about 2 weeks. All they need are 4 votes. You have to do it. You have to wait 2 months until after the city council elections. But that's coming up, and no such discussion is on the horizon. And I've got to say, even though I brought it up on this show, I did not bring it up when 2 council members attended a meeting of the group Conscience and Action yesterday, which I'm a member. I didn't say, all right, let's fire the city manager. Instead, I, in usual, jump into the power game, do what you can when you can, compromise if you must sort of thing, which is easy to fall into. I agreed to help them work on some not minor issues, but issues that didn't involve a fundamental change in staff procedure at City Council. And I'll be talking about that later in this broadcast. But in any case, let's get into the oral communications, be able to hear what some of the people said, and get some of my reactions, and you'll be able to hear Mincemeat Martine in action.
So oral communications is an opportunity for members of the community to address the council on any items that are not listed on today's agenda that relate to the work of the council. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the council? Okay, so if you're addressing the Council on Oral Communications, please stand to my left. And you will be given 2 minutes to speak.
Nicholas Whitehead.
Before you do, Nicholas, excuse me.
I believe I'm next.
Well, actually, is there a Carol Walker in the audience here? Okay, Carol, you approached me in advance, so you will go first, and you will be given 3 minutes. And then it will be you, and then you, Nicholas. Okay.
And that 3-minute period is usually 5 minutes. It's for a group presentation, which if you contact the City Council in advance, you can get time for a group presentation if you're representing a group. I've done that on a number of occasions for HUF. Others have done it for other groups. But as I said, it's normally 5 minutes, not 3 minutes. 3 minutes is the normal time for individual speakers, or was until a few years ago.
Okay, good evening, Mayor Watkins, members of City Council, and fellow Santa Cruz residents. My name is Carol Walker, and I'm a 30-year resident of Felker Street. I'm speaking as a representative of the Felker Street.
Okay.
Speaking as a representative.
Okay. You can go ahead and pause for a time. Sorry, Bonnie.
I'm sorry, I have laryngitis, too. It doesn't help.
Okay. So if we could, okay, go ahead and pronounce, and then we'll hear from you, and if those that are in the audience could please keep your voices down while we hear from our speakers. Yes, go ahead.
So I'm speaking as a representative of the Felker and Price Street neighborhoods, as well as Coastal Watershed Council, regarding our concerns related to the homeless encampment at Ross, also known as the Ross Encampment, and how it's impacting our neighborhoods and the river. Some of these concerns aren't new. City Council told us many years ago that the city had a tolerance policy and did nothing much to address our concerns at that time. Our tolerance level has now peaked, and trying to tolerate the Ross encampment is more than is even reasonable to ask of us. So we're presenting to you 6 specific requests that we believe would provide immediately relief from some of the current issues and should be easy to implement. We've been working with Coastal Watershed Council over the past year on projects that affect both the river and our neighborhoods. We include Coastal Watershed Council tonight as this encampment is having a negative impact on its efforts to rehabilitate and revitalize the river that helps our neighborhoods thrive. Coastal Watershed Council has been making great headway in educating the community and especially our neighborhoods along the river levee about the importance the river holds in our lives. The Ross encampment is challenging its efforts to support a thriving river ecosystem and create a river walk that is attractive and accessible to all of us. We are hoping we won't lose ground on the progress we've made along the river walk and in our neighborhoods. So please be thoughtful, compassionate, and very serious in considering our requests to make positive changes that will benefit all of us. So our 6 requests are to establish a clear boundary around the camp in order to keep the Santa Cruz River Walk open and clear for public access to protect the river from the impacts of human activity. Move the entrance to the encampment away from the Riverwalk and Felker Street to the opposite end of the site at River Street. Move the porta potties away from the Riverwalk to the River Street end of the site. Increase police patrol on Felker and Price Streets. We suggest foot patrol versus drive-bys, as this allows for more attention to detail of illegal activities going on. Place gates at each end of the Highway 1 pedestrian bridge to be locked at night.
Thank you.
I have 30 more seconds. I had an email that said I had 3.5 minutes. I timed it to 3.5 minutes.
I'm sorry.
You can give us your comments here.
That's Cynthia Matthews essentially saying it's okay if we lie to you about your right to have 3.5 minutes. We'll cut you off whenever we feel like it. Don't worry about it because we may look at it later if we choose, but you won't have the opportunity to give it to the public. These 5 proposals, and I believe the 6th is brought up later by another one of the Tannery/Felker Street residents concerned about what is essentially a lot of people that are gathered together at the Ross campground, more than really can be provided for in that space. But then again, the city isn't opening any other space, and police are driving them there. So it's, and I guess to their credit, they're not blaming the campers so much, but trying to find in their own way solutions, you know, move the entrance, move the porta potties, set up a barrier. They want to cut off not the pedestrian bridge across the river to the Denny's side of the river, but to across the freeway, because that has to do with, I believe, although maybe they're talking, I spoke to some people from this group later. There were a group of about 10 or more of them that were clustering outside after the oral communications period. And I got a, only one of them would give his name and his contact information, but they seemed to be willing to talk. They wanted to make some contact, but they were afraid to walk down to the camp and actually talk to people there, or at least they didn't really, they hadn't done so in it to any extent. I think they'd been there once or twice, but they hadn't really established any contacts or communications there, which I think is what really needs to be done. But again, you hear she's trying to make 6 points, and Watkins just slices her right off, preferring to engage in, you know, the nice grand gestures to foreign visitors. You know, all you have to do is add another 10 or 15 minutes to the end of the meeting to do this. But no, these folks have to, I don't know, they have late-night cocktails. They have to go to, I don't know what they're going to, this council insists on. But more important, the progressives on the council aren't stopping to demand that this practice stop. They have 4 votes. They can change the practice. They can insist on a change immediately, but they're not doing so. Now, I don't know. Cummins seems to be heavily influenced by people like Myers and Matthews, so maybe he's the vote that turns and is going to be turning a lot of the time. You know, perhaps deluding himself that he is being a compromising fellow who's trying to look at the broader perspective and reach out to the other part of the community, instead of recognizing that this is really a struggle against entrenched conservative staff. And he's new to this whole thing. He hasn't been around, I think, as an activist in Santa Cruz for long, and it hasn't been his purview. But I haven't had much conversation with him. He seems a nice enough guy, but, you know, conservatives are nice people, too. It's just that you don't want them to be running things unless you like driving all the homeless out of town and paying exorbitant rents. I mean, you know, if you can afford that, that's great.
Okay. Thank you. So, yes. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. At 2 minutes. She doesn't. Oh, the next guy here.
I'm next. Yeah, okay.
Okay, then go.
No, I haven't been called up yet.
This is Pat Kittle coming up. Pat is usually kind of a one-trick pony. He's really pissed about Israeli government behavior in the West Bank, which a lot of us are, but he also is extremely against illegal immigration, I guess he would put it. And he has some strong views on Israeli government participation in the 9/11 bombing that hit the Twin Towers. You know, and he usually carries a big sign when he walks up there. And the woman ahead of me in line was asking, is he anti-Semitic? And I think Pat Kittle again is his name, might well have a little of that tendency. He has in the past commented on disproportionate Jewish influence on the council, so that kind of tends to indicate a little bit of anti-Semitism there. But the issues that he raises around Israeli government stuff is, I think, a serious one that this city council has never taken up around, let's say, BDS, which is boycott, sanctions, and finding some way to rein in the killing that's going on there. And the illegal occupation of the West Bank and other territory that the Israeli government is gleefully and enthusiastically supporting. I don't know that local city governments have a lot to do with that, but movements across the country to oppose apartheid in South Africa in the 80s eventually, I think, had success, or may have had success, in prompting both individual disinvestment, that's what the that's the middle D of the BDS movement, and also broader corporate disinvestment. So I think there's some issues on which it's appropriate that city councils do take a stand. He's pretty defensive and angry in his approach, and he got one person to clap in the audience this time, which is unusual. I think one time I even clapped for him because I agree with part of what he has to say, but it's kind of him against the world. Anyway, here he is talking.
Typically, the mayor says next. That's what I was waiting for. So, regarding the homeless side, and it reminded me of a month ago, maybe, when a friend and I spent well over 8 hours cleaning up the remains of a homeless campsite at the...
And this is another one of Pat's pet peeves, is the environmental degradation created by inappropriately bad camping, which, you know, one can sympathize with. My response to him has always been, well, then you should be pushing for people, for there to be decent campgrounds for people and adequate facilities. But his response has always been that to denounce me for not demanding tidier camping, which I call for tidier camping. And indeed, I invited Brent Adams to come to the press conference that we did regarding the police chief Mills' abusive behavior, or that of his officers, toward Alicia Cool and other RV owners who are have no legal place to sleep and try to use their own vehicles and provide their own shelter and are getting hassled by privileged Panjan drums in the neighborhoods who live in houses and somehow feel they have the right to own the sidewalks and the parking spaces against people who are lawfully obeying the 72-hour law, which is an issue that we took up and got publicized in the Sentinel article, front page Sentinel article recently, which I think I talked about on the last show. Anyway, Pat is an environmentalist, and he was much regarded by one of our former broadcasters, Uncle Dennis Davey, who you may remember. He did a show right after this one in the old days, From the Cream to the Dregs. He died a month or two ago, and he had more regard for Pat than I do, but I always felt Pat needed to be given his right to speak, and so here's the rest of what he had to say.
South end of Henry Cowell State Park. That was where the fire occurred that was threatening Paradise Park, if you all recall that. Turned out the fire, the ground zero, was a homeless campsite. Again, I spent 8 hours with a friend of mine. We took everything out to the highway. I had to take it down the mountain, cross tracks, up a hillside to Highway 9 and take it to the dump. We paid for the dump fee at our own expense. And just so you know, that was that fire was courtesy of homeless people that are allowed to infest our public lands, which are the most beautiful in the world.
An unfortunate choice of words, of course, suggesting that homeless people are pests to be, shall we say, eliminated. Not good, Pat.
World, according to some. All right. Now, I want to get to my main topic here, which is the fact that Israel, or there's overwhelming evidence that Israel is primarily responsible for 9/11, which has led us directly into these endless wars. No more wars for Israel. And furthermore, Christopher Bolin, if you simply go to this website, Bolin, BOLLYN.com, you will see compelling evidence for what I'm saying. Israel did 9/11. Christopher Boleyn is a highly respected investigative reporter right here from Santa Cruz, UCSC. Christopher Boleyn, you may never have heard of him, because when he was going to speak locally, the ADL, which is a basically a Jewish group, vested interest in promoting Israeli aggression against the rest of the people in the Mideast. Anyway, the ADL prevented Christopher Boleyn from speaking.
Thank you.
Next.
Oh, Nicholas Whitehead.
I wish to thank you, Madam Mayor, for your well-conceived and well-received remarks at the Martin Luther King. She's not here? Well, anyway, I want to thank her. But fine words that she gave must be followed by determined action. We must, as a city, declare that critical human needs for survival are our top priority. Unless we act, the health of the destitute, their physical and mental health, will affect the overall health of our communities. In particular, we must act to house and shelter women and children, to grant housing stability to teenage foster kids, not forcing them onto the streets at 18. Finally, we must shelter or house all disabled people, including mentally disabled, and the very oldest among our homeless population. I thank all those who work daily to secure the needs and provide hope to our homeless. We need to augment their efforts with priority funding to open shelter space and transitional housing countywide. We also need more public health workers and a huge increase in social workers to intercept poverty at its very roots. Without the intervention, we can't adequately redirect the lives of those struggling to survive. Moms with kids living in cars, alienated military veterans, distressed young people. They are members of our human family.
And of course, who can disagree with anything Nick says? Except there's no specific policies being suggested. And I guess that's one of the things that he and I and others are going to be working on with some council members if they carry through, which I suspect they will. We had a meeting about this yesterday in the group Conscience in Action, and we're going to be trying to put together some very particular proposals for the next city council meeting, which will be the second Tuesday in February, but which was supposed to be at this last meeting. But for some reason, the city manager, Martine Brunel, just forgot to put it on the agenda. Or maybe it was the mayor forgot to put it on. Or perhaps the progressives forgot to ask. And we've seen this with Sandy Brown and the Just Eviction and the rent freeze emergency ordinances that I think should have been proposed back in November, but weren't. And well, we'll see what happens.
Hello, I'm Henry Joseph Lopez. I enacted sovereignty earlier. Respect the 72-hour parking law. I think officers actually save lives when they knock on people's windows and there's oxygen deprivation and condensation's going on. So.
And what Henry is referring to here, of course, is the law that the officers should be respecting, which is not to harass people in their vehicles in response to the neighborhood, neighborhood complaint by a house resident, that van is in front of my house and it's blocking my view and they might be child molesters in there and they have a child there, maybe we should call CPS and there could be all kinds of problems, please come out and ask them to move. And besides, they've been here for 2 weeks. Unless they've been there for more than 72 hours, it's quite legal for them to remain. In fact, it's improper for the police and a false police report for neighbors to claim they're violating the law and call the police out when no violation is happening. And as you know, if you're a regular listener to this show, we had a press conference, Huff and Conscience in Action had a press conference at the police station questioning Andy Mills about this. He denied that his officer was doing any such thing, even though he was confronted with some rather, I thought, persuasive claims by Alicia Kuhl, who is a mother of three, lives in her family with her partner, Eric, that's not the case, that she is getting harassed, particularly by Officer Joe Habe, one of the enforcement officers. In any case, Henry his suggestion that it's a welfare check to see how things are is, I think, either naive or rather misguided. I think the issue has to be whether repeated such behavior by police, and particularly looking for problems for an RV, looking to find some code violation that you can then use to intimidate someone into leaving or even towing their home away, this has to be stopped, and hopefully that'll be one of the things we'll be trying to bring up at the next city council, not at oral communications and not banging on the windows outside, but hopefully on the city council agenda. Now, wouldn't that be nice? Let's hear a little bit more of Henry's perspective that is not mine at all and seems a little confused.
I could care less for someone actually wanting to kill themselves in their car subconsciously. But about communication, I have amazing communication skills because I see in algorithms. And as a contributor to making sure that renters' hearts are feeling a little bit more safe, I think that all of you, now that I have sealed your hearts with our new committee, because I knew that the last one was, you know, putting off so that newer visionists can actually, you know, perceive how they're actually trying to compensate with everybody, because it's not easy to, you know, expand like the universe is trying to when it's so condensed in Santa Cruz.
If you don't understand this, you're not the only one. It sounds like sometimes people get stage fright up there, and sometimes they're just somewhat inarticulate. I don't think Henry has stage fright. I just think he's pretty muddled.
So it is very
expensive. I'm going to pause your time here. This is an opportunity for you to speak to items that are not on our agenda that have an impact that the council can influence.
Oh, okay.
So if it's not related, then I would like to...
So this is for the council, okay? So you hit like a huge, you know, wave. You realized you had to go use the restroom real quick, come back, or whatever it was. You know, you had a big jolt in your system.
He's referring to Mayor Watkins leaving the room during Nick Whitehead's testimony.
This is like the algorithms of the world right now. And then you came back and checked me, you know what I mean, psychologically, which was another spike. Well, right now the top scientist, which I go to UCSC and I am incorporated with the three top schools in California, and I consult and talk to the smartest people.
Okay.
They're studying the
peaks.
And all I'm saying.
Okay, your time is up. Okay.
And the applause in the audience, I think, were from people who were mocking the guy who was speaking. It's actually true that at oral communications, you can speak about anything you want. And I think it has to theoretically be within the purview of the Santa Cruz City Council, but that's a pretty broad range. So, for example, you can stand up there and say nothing. You have a silent prayer. That's been done. And it's permissible. You have the right to use that time to do that, because sometimes silence speaks more than words. Usually not, of course. Usually silence gives consent, as they say. Or I've heard that said. Anyway, here's more.
So just a reminder that this is an opportunity for oral communications, an opportunity to address the council on items that are not on the agenda. And if you're sitting to my left, then you're in line for oral communications. Is that correct? And these are all for items that are not on today's agenda, correct? Who, you as well. Who additionally is here?
I have to go last.
Well, you could stand if you'd like. Would you like to go first? Okay, what? Okay, do you not want to be the last speaker? You can go next. If you're not the last speaker, he'll be the last speaker. Okay.
I have just a quick question, man.
And this is a current kind of, a frequent occurrence by mayors recently. They will suddenly designate a speaker in the line as the last speaker, when in fact the last speaker is the last person who wants to speak, regardless of whom the mayor has designated as the last speaker, people have a right to line up at oral communications and speak. There's no provision in the rules of decorum, even, which is another issue entirely, whether one should be bound by the rules of decorum or the First Amendment or the Brown Act, which is really the right to have certain access to public comment for every item on the city council agenda. This business of suddenly cutting off people after a certain speaker is a form of arbitrary discrimination that isn't provided for either in the rules, in Santa Cruz traditions, and possibly maybe a violation of the Brown Act, certainly the spirit of the Brown Act, which allows people to speak not based upon the whim of the mayor as to when she'll cut off oral communication, but the reasonable expectation advanced beforehand and clear to the community so they know they can frame their speeches with the adequate time. And you heard one speaker, the first one, trying to give a speech for 3.5 minutes. She couldn't even finish her sixth point. So they know what they can say, and so it can be reasonably and intelligibly said. But you see, since city councils, and this again, I emphasize, and the mayors in Santa Cruz specifically, don't really care what you have to say. What they care is to get through this business as fast as they can and then get on with the prearranged agenda, which essentially is run by the city manager and the staff. That's something which many of us have said has to change. Indeed, some of the winning candidates have said that has to change. But now they have to do it.
Okay, one second, please. Why don't you go next? And then in the blue, you will be our last speaker. And okay, go ahead.
I'm Scott Graham.
Well, hang on just a second, buddy. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, just a quick question. Just a quick question for the city attorney. It's my understanding that public comment is a time when people can speak about anything not on the agenda, but is there a line stipulating it has to be something that the council can control, or is it their opportunity to be able to express themselves with however they want for 2 minutes?
The Brown Act requires the council to provide at each meeting an opportunity for any member of the public to speak on any item that they wish that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the city council.
Oh.
So it does not require topics or the council to entertain topics on foreign affairs or things that are unrelated to city business.
Thank you for clarifying.
It doesn't require that.
Yeah. And then, I will noting that we have a 7:30 delegation from our sister city outside waiting, I will go ahead and change the time to 1 minute.
What? Go ahead. I don't get my 2 minutes.
Yeah. Go ahead. You get 1 minute.
This, of course, was completely unnecessary. She is disadvantaging local speakers in order to present a good impression to a visiting delegation. All she needs to do is extend time 5 or 10 minutes to let people finish their 2 minutes. But she's violating, well, I've sort of said this before, so it seems pretty outrageous to me, but and people were not happy with it, but until they essentially start ignoring it and speak for 2 minutes anyway, and then the speakers can get an eye of what really goes on at city council, she chooses to remove them by force. This is going to continue as a policy, I'm afraid, because the ability of people in power to have their power really depends upon the consent of the governed. And as long as they consent, they can continue to shorten time, give more and more abusive orders, and that will happen.
Anyway,
you can
go ahead.
I would move to increase the time back to the original 2 minutes to allow people to have their full time to speak.
This is again Drew Glover. This happened after some outbursts from the audience. I think there was a similar situation that occurred where Crone made a similar motion. Either it was in the previous city council meeting or earlier in this particular meeting. And of course, this needs to be institutionalized so that that the mayor cannot just arbitrarily make these decisions in the middle of a meeting, frustrating those who have been waiting in line or possibly for longer periods of time simply for an opportunity to get their brief time to speak, having prepared it beforehand. But good for Glover for at least trying to restore the pitiful 2 minutes that everyone gets to speak.
You can go ahead and pause it.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion in the floor to allow for 2 minutes to speak. Go ahead.
I'm speaking against that. Oral communications...
This, of course, is Cynthia Matthews, who never met a repressive rule she doesn't like in my experience.
Is an optional time to hear from the members of the public, which we are trying diligently to do, but we do have a group that has just arrived visiting from Japan that is has a time certain to be introduced to us at 7:30, and we're trying to accommodate multiple needs. So 1 minute.
They have a time certain, but they don't have a train to catch, and they don't have a plane to catch, and there's no real indication that they are going to be, deprived of a place to sleep if they have to wait an additional 5 or 10 minutes. Whereas, of course, some of the people I don't know if there were actually any homeless speakers in that line, but there were those supporting them, will be having trouble finding places to sleep comfortably that night, although the police have generously herded everyone to the Ross campground. So I guess that's... Well, they aren't arresting them at the Ross campground. They're just letting people sort of, like rats filling up in a cage, start nipping at each other.
It should allow everyone standing in line to have their say, and almost everyone standing in line knows that you can communicate with us by email, written letter, and so forth.
Would she agree to have her own communications cut to 1 minute speaking on the council? I don't think so.
I respect the mayor's efforts to try and juggle multiple needs.
Thank you for that.
But I would also say that it's not impossible.
We can go ahead. As mayor, I'd like to take the floor, please. And we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Now, notice she doesn't allow even debate on the council to proceed because she's in such a hurry to get to the 7:30 deadline that she has proposed. She's like the school marm who has to meet the ding-dong of the school schedule. But that's not how it is at City Council. And she's been there for 2 years, so one wonders, has she learned... She's learned no particular respect for the community, it seems, but rather she's learned that the community has to learn to fear and respect the authority of those who wield the mayor's gavel. And so she cuts off any discussion, calls for a vote, and there are votes. We don't even get to know who voted in favor. You can hear Chris Crone's voice and Drew Glover's voice. I don't know if Sandy Brown voted for it, but I know that Justin Cummins voted to maintain the 1 minute squeak and get moving time period. So,
opposed? No. Okay, that fails with the lack of votes. We'll go ahead and move on to public comment. You'll be given 1 minute, sir.
Do I get a full minute?
Good
evening. I'm Scott Graham. Back in the 70s, the city council, which was made up of mostly Republicans, made a huge mistake. They tore down a beautiful library, the Carnegie Library, and built what they considered a modern library. Now, we're looking at tearing that library down or doing something else with that library and sticking the library in a parking garage. I would implore you not to make the same mistake that they made back in the 70s when they tore down the Carnegie Library. I wish it was still there. They could have added on to it. They didn't need to tear it down. So leave the library where it is. If it has problems, fix those problems. But don't stick the library in a parking garage. Thank you.
It also has to be noted that the entire time for oral communications, and please forgive me for being so emphatic on this relatively minor detail, it's an example of how abuses happen and then become institutionalized and just a part of business as usual at City Council. The actual amount of time that people speaking has been cut into by the council's discussions, interruptions. Martine, the mayor's, Martine Watkins, commentary herself. And so it's actually less than the 30-minute period. It's probably about 27 minutes, something like that. I don't have the exact time, and I could be wrong by a minute or two. But in fact, this only became important toward the end of the oral communications, the council period, when the last speaker was cut off because she didn't have enough time. What she was really saying was she didn't really care how many people wanted to talk. She was going to have those Japanese delegation from another city in there getting their fluff awards and doing her little sort of her show business. It's not really business. I sputter here because it seems like such a substitution of style and pomposity for substance and respect for real community members who are trying to say things that they're not allowed to say except during this very brief period once every 2 weeks to the public at a city council meeting.
Cynthia Berger with Santa Cruz Tenants. You have the power to take less controversial measures, and one of them is to create a solid governmental base for sorely needed tenant services by establishing an Office of Tenant Services. The Office of Tenant Services would provide a centralized physical office from which to offer essential services to Santa Cruz's large renter population. It's not a rent board, but it could really help. Oversee data collection on the tenant condition, which is needed in order to apply for and win grants, and then submit well-written grants in a timely way, fund bilingual tenant counseling and rights hotline, allocate and administer rent payment assistance, other protections of the renter residential population to be determined by people who know what they're talking about, a departmental manager director whose job description should be composed with the help of tenant advocates. The holder of this position should have the powers of a high-ranking staff member rather than a mid-level administrator and should have the attending qualifications and to provide oversight for the programs for first-time homeowners.
Yeah. Okay, next
period.
We'll give
you my minute. And this is sort of the alternative that Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association is proposing, given the fact, and she's really made this case rather strongly, both in prior shows and yesterday she made it at the Conscience in Action meeting, that having even a just eviction protection law, such as the one that was tabled at this same meeting just, well, an hour later, is inappropriate and ineffective anyway without rent control or rent freeze. And therefore, what you really want is some kind of government body that's supportive of tenants, that gathers data. And I will probably be suggesting to these council members, I mean, I support that, of course. But we also need to know how many people have been evicted since December 11th when the rent freeze and the just eviction law passed last February expired. How many, and the city council declined to pass an emergency resolution. How many people, what have the raises been in terms of landlord costs over the last 4 years? And we hear a lot of, if you've been listening to the city council debates and the oral input from the so-called home providers, meaning those who essentially prey off those who need places to live and have to pay whatever rents are being charged. What are the real costs? It's said that, well, you know, taxes are rising and you have to keep up with the taxes, and so the folks who are renting have to essentially take the burden to pay the taxes so that the but the issue to me is how much does that actually involve? And I've asked that the landlords be transparent about this. And so far as I can see, not a one of them has. Maybe one, actually. You get all this generalized information that they're the best mom and pop landlords, and they've kept rents stable for so long a period of time. But how much have their rents been compared to the cost of living is really the question. And also, we need to know how many tenants are being evicted. That's the crisis that we need to determine the extent of. And that's what I'd like to see happening immediately. It's not going to happen through the city council, I don't think. It has to happen through perhaps people on the city council and activists outside the city council raising the cry and alarm, establishing a central information bureau and having people being aware that they have a right to give a call and tell and say what's happening and maybe eventually get some kind of support.
Okay, this is the second time I've only had a minute to speak. So I'm a business owner at the Gateway Plaza next to the Ross Encampment. So my business, as I spoke to you guys 60 days ago, is like a thoroughfare for everybody going to that homeless camp. The city manager and a police chief offered to put up a fence for us, to fence that off, and all it is actual gate. The fence is only up there for about 20 minutes a day, and then they take it down. I don't know when the last time any of the city council members have been down there to see that encampment, but it's just, people shouldn't be living in that. You guys need to find something else, somewhere else for these people to go. I mean, there's four bathrooms there. There's no way I could get a permit to build a restaurant with only four bathrooms for 100 people.
And, of course, it isn't just there are only four bathrooms. There are four porta-potties, porta-potties that are not disabled accessible. It has to be said that probably it's better than for any other encampment situation in the city of Santa Cruz, and most people live outside that encampment, although they're scattered around, and so it's less concentrated, less intense, less focused, less visible. But there's never been an interest in taking care of homeless people, or at least acknowledging the fact that they're going to take care of themselves as best they can, and they will do what they need to do to take care of themselves, and if you make it a police problem, it will become a greater police problem and a more expensive one for the city. But this is a consideration that people who are running the city simply either don't want to face or prefer to pretend isn't true.
Right, let alone 200 people a day. That thing needs to be moved. It needs to be somewhere else so my customers don't need to see on a daily basis guns drawn for drug deals and ambulances taking OD people away. I mean, it needs to move somewhere else.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
And, of course, that's a misnomer and an exaggeration. It doesn't happen every day. They don't see guns drawn every day and people taken away. But just one or two such instances can, you know, upset the customers and the middle class people to realize that they're not living in paradise and they're not visiting paradise. But then again, they aren't, are they? When it gets to be paradise, then they can maintain that illusion with some integrity.
My name is Gary Ingram. I'm a tannery resident and artist. I was going to talk about the Ross Camp, but I'm just going to speak a little bit about what happened today. We get a lot of people walking through to the Ross Camp and back again. This morning, a woman was walking her dog. I was watching out my window, and she was, for no reason, just this guy with his bicycle and his guitar and everything, just started to rail at her with obscenities. He said, "Fuck you." He told her she was a real bitch, that he was going to kill her. And she's sneaking over to the side so she could be as intrusive as possible. And I'm sure she was scared to death. We get this stuff all the time walking through there. And he did it all the way to the theater. And I'm talking about from the mall to the theater. And then another pal.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
And, of course, this guy took the photo of the guy, called the police department to have him arrested for an assault based on what he'd seen. But I suspect he didn't. You have to hold individuals accountable for what they do. And although it is certainly true that when you cram people together in a situation that's difficult, even for anybody living outside, it can be difficult. And for folks with various disabilities, it can be even more difficult. For people crammed into one area because the police have decided they want to enforce neighborhood prejudices in other areas, it can be even more difficult. But that's my reaction to what this tannery resident is saying. The tannery is at least two long blocks away on the riverfront walk. It's on the other side of the freeway, and I guess what they're proposing is that the bridge between, I think there may be two proposals, I'm not entirely sure. One is to lock the gates at both ends of the Highway 1 bridge, the underpass, which I don't think I've ever walked under there. I don't usually walk that way to the tannery. I, you know, drive there when in my little sticker mobile. But there's another proposal from the Felker Street folks, Felker being the street next to Denny's, that dead ends into the San Lorenzo River and then leads to the pedestrian bridge, that area also be locked off. There's a lot of lock-em-off proposals, at least at night. And part of this is based on, I'm assuming, our legitimate concerns about theft and the fear of theft. And also these kinds of incidents where people feel, even if it doesn't happen to them, if they heard about it, they don't want to use the area, so it becomes a difficult area to use. When I've been down there, I'm not a vulnerable woman walking a dog. I'm just a, you know, sort of a stocky, chubby, older fellow. And also some of the people there know me, so I don't have the same experience. There are considerations that need to be resolved by discussions between the camp and the folks, not between the police and the city council necessarily, although if there's individual abuses that are actually real criminal behavior, and assaulting someone and threatening someone is criminal behavior, that's a legitimate call to involve police. If you're a fan of the police and you think that could be an acceptable solution.
And sorry, we'll go ahead and pause you. Reminder, you in the blue will be our last speaker. Okay, you will be our last speaker in the visor. Okay, go ahead.
I'm a new business owner, actually at the tannery. I also am a homeowner in Santa Cruz County. I'm appalled that you all, whether you're conservative or liberal, can watch, and I drive by that Ross encampment every day. You have an opportunity to be leaders in this country. This is a nationwide problem. We all know it is. We all know it's difficult. Why don't you stand up, pull together public-private funds, and make a name for yourselves. It's a disgrace, and I think you guys can do a lot better. I will help you. There are many people in this community that will help you. I'm just appalled. And I think you all know that you all are too. Thank you.
Thanks to the two council members who tried to restore 2 minutes of oral communication.
To the community, we deserve better. We have the right, when we come to these meetings, to see at least for 3 minutes. That includes
the opportunity for you, sir, to...
Excuse me, can I continue?
Go ahead and pause the time. This is the opportunity for you to address the council.
And I am addressing the council. With my back to the council, disrespectfully, okay? You understand? What I'm saying is, what we want this council to do is establish new rules. Don't allow this mayor or subsequent mayors to cut off the communication. So people have been standing in line waiting, people who I don't always agree with, but they should have the right to speak here, and not be interrupted in the midst of their speeches, as this mayor has been doing. She has to be held in check. We have four so-called progressives on the council. Why don't they do this? Thank you.
Next speaker.
Thank you. My name is Elise Caspi, and I am going to address the $10 million that the city staff is in charge of disbursing for homeless services. My understanding about this money is that it will be there will be a meeting coming up very soon, perhaps this week, I've heard, which will address how to make proposals for this money and so forth. And I just want to say that in Santa Cruz we have a history of absolutely refusing to build emergency shelters. I'm not going to talk about what I know about the shelters that are existent, so such as the Paul Ely Loft that leave empty beds all the time. In the grand jury report and investigation of 2014 to 2015, there is a very excellent summary given about the causes of homelessness, and what they recommend is suitable emergency shelters. If you don't want Ross Camp and the problems there, make sure this $10 million goes into building emergency shelters in Santa Cruz. Thank you.
And I'm not as sanguine as that. Emergency shelters are not really places where people really want to go. They're places where they're herded or where they are sometimes because they're desperate. And the fanciful claim that their pathways to housing has been pretty much discredited as far as I can see, although, or maybe if you want to be generous, remains to be proven. In spite of the big signs outside the homeless lack of services center you see posted as you drive by on Highway 1. But shelters are no fun. You might say, well, campgrounds aren't, are there? Well, overcrowded campgrounds are no fun. But there can be campgrounds such as Brent's proposed Sanctuary Village, such as the proposal by Steve Plaich and Phil Posner of depot park-type campgrounds that are small, that have adequate facilities, and that provide both a combination of privacy and an opportunity for no extensive overt drug use and sort of drug market sales. I indeed have to buy into that to some extent, much as I'm a libertarian to some respect and believing in the right to use the substances you need to. You also need to provide opportunities for people to get off those substances as well. But you need wet camps, you need dry camps, as they call them, wet camps being those where drugs are acceptable, drugs and alcohol, provided that the behavior does not get abusive. That's really, of course, the key issue. And that really can be an issue in a community, a small camp. But you need the opportunity to permit those camps. And that's one of the issues that is going to be coming up, one hopes, at the next shitty council meeting. Or at least it's being so proposed. But again, it will probably descend into the cave of the staff and either never come out again or come out looking very misshapen. I'm not terribly optimistic about this, but let's hear some more.
Hi, my name's Alicia Poole, and I would just like to say that currently we have no protection for tenants. If we had any protection for tenants at all, I might not have lost my rental.
I'm going to
And this is Alicia Poole, who is the woman who had an exchange with Chief Mills, who was on the front page of the Sentinel a week later, describing the kind of abuses of the 72-hour parking law that the police and various neighbors in various neighborhoods were engaging in with respect to her and other people living in their RVs and their cars. The phone ringing you hear comes from the fact that this was recorded over the television, and so it was not recorded actually at the city council. So that's what the ringing is about.
And items that are not on the agenda.
Certainly.
So I would just like to second what Cynthia requested, and I would also like to speak for the homeless. I've heard a lot of negative comments. They don't infest things. They don't need to be locked in the gate. We need to address the issues of our homeless population in a way that allows them to also have dignity. Currently, the Ross Camp needs potable water. They need wood chips to keep the ground dry. They need immediate laundry vouchers. And I would just like to say that we need to address the issues of the Ross Camp in a respectful way while keeping their dignity. The homeless do not infest the community. They are also part of this community. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had other things that I wanted to speak about, but I think that this takes
priority. This is activist Ursula from Conscience and
Action. To take away someone's right to talk for 2 minutes because someone was unable to express themselves clearly or was talking possibly off subject is denying that human being their own right and their own voice. You may not think that they're speaking clearly or coherently, but if you listen carefully, you can often hear wisdom from someone that you do not think counts. And I'm through.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Isaac. I'm a recording artist, go by Lyrical Eye. I've been in Santa Cruz for 14 years, and I just wanted to talk about supporting the arts and giving more arts and opportunity for diversity people as myself, because I think it's very important, especially with all these issues going on. I think it's really important for us to have more diversity with the arts and supporting the people that are actually doing the work. Myself, I've been performing in Santa Cruz for over 14 years in the streets and doing positive work in the community, and I think it's important to support those artists that are doing positive work, because that solves a lot of solutions when you got people that are actually doing the work and giving something to the youth. And I'm speaking for the youth because I think it's very important, because they need opportunities too. They're houseless, and it's important for us to come together to solve those issues as well as all these other issues, but to support the local artists as myself that is putting in the work to make Santa Cruz better and do something positive. Thank you.
And that's Isaac Collins, also known as Lyrical Eye. You may have heard him doing his performances on Pacific Avenue and elsewhere.
I had no plan to speak to you tonight. I thought I'd give you all a break. And then I heard an example of free speech that was incredibly offensive to me. Watching that person in the front of this room with that neon sign, if that sign had addressed any other minority group, people of color, people of a different sexual orientation, people of another country, would that have been allowed to go on? That's almost an abuse of free speech.
Actually, the sign talked about 9/11 being an Israeli government plot or orchestrated activity. And there are some people who have presented evidence to that effect. I haven't come to a conclusion about it. But to attack the Israeli government's behavior in the Middle East is not to be anti-Semitic or bigoted. It, to me, it's to speak truth to power, where the Israeli lobby in this country is extremely strong. And I don't mean the Jewish lobby. I mean the Israeli government lobby. Let's distinguish between the two, shall we?
And I just have to share with you that my heart is jumping out of my chest. I am incredibly upset that all of you sat there impassively watching that go on and allowed that to happen in front of this audience. That's not the Santa Cruz that I love. I'm sorry.
Sad to hear people clapping because they want the council to crack down on unpopular free speech. Not my cup of tea.
Oh, hi, my name is Roberta Carter. I live on Price Street. And we had a meeting last night with Elkhorn Price. Captain Millis was there, representative from McPherson's office. And we had talked, the neighborhood got together, and we talked. And what Tara Walker was saying, and I will reiterate, we understand that you're watching out for the homeless and watching out for the camp, but we want to raise our hand and say, watch out for us, too. We need help right now, and we've been assured the camp will not be here for many, many months more. But right now, we are citizens. We are suffering. We are being, every day, people running up and down our driveway, stealing our things. We need you to help us right now. And she gave you some ways that you could help us. I'm asking for help. For right now, until the camp the issues can be fixed. And I know there's giant issues, but please help us on Price and Felker Street, please.
Thank you.
And this actually is a somewhat different crowd than the West Side bigots who are, I don't know, the ones downtown who are breaking Pat Colby's windows. If I got a report on that, and I was going to actually play an interview with her brother John, but it looks like I'm not going to have time to do that. But on Sunday, there'll be more. I do a show from 9:30 to 3, in case you want to tune into that one. These people sound like, you know, they're people who are concerned about particular violations of the law, thefts, really uncomfortable environment for themselves that comes when so many people are crowded together in so small a space nearby, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and particularly not the good, the bad, and the ugly as people, but the people put in conditions that make it even worse for them, for those who are in the camp.
Before you get started, I want to just remind that we have closed public comment after oral communications after that, the one with the visor. So we will not
be bringing additional. That's the royal
members.
We. That's
no.
Mayor
but you're welcome
Martin
to email Lincoln. Us at any time. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, you do.
You do. You get to speak. You are the last one. Go ahead.
So I'm hearing, okay, from the owner of one of the stores in the Gateway Center and from people on Falker Street that, believe it or not, the camp there is problematic. I noticed Chris here raised his hand when he said, you know, have any of you actually been there? And it is kind of too high density right now. It's squalid. And I think you should consider the possibility of drawing people away from there, incentivizing, you know, more responsible behavior from some of the people that are in that camp area. Because right now it's in a polarized condition, just like the camp was on the lower part of what do they call it, the benchlands. This is kind of an impossible suggestion, but I know that Bernie Sanders supporters are into impossible things. But I just wanted to say.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe they could have half the people go to the benchlands.
Okay, go ahead. You're the next.
Actually, that's not a bad suggestion. This is Brad who just spoke. Again, incentivizing bad behavior, again, is blaming people there instead of talking about the conditions that are creating these kinds of problems. But I like his suggestion. The bench lands are open. They could be used. But that would trespass on the sacred parks and recs area, and we haven't heard Tony Elliott offering to do anything as Mario Garcia did last year.
Speaker here.
Susan Worth. I've lived here about 12 years myself in this county, but I actually live in Soquel. But my main concern is the library and the fact that I have a feeling that maybe they decided to put up a parking garage and move that beautiful library because so many people live, you know, have their things and their belongings all around them and stuff, and they're smoking and whatnot are hanging around that library. And it's like, do they want to bury them in the bottom of that, the basement of that parking garage? I'm not sure. And, you know, it all just doesn't feel right to me. And the people that are living by the Ross store, I went through there too about a week ago, and everything seemed pretty good, you know. But
you.
Where are these people to go?
Thank you. Okay. So at this time, I want to acknowledge that at 7:30 we had already identified that we would be having our sister city's business delegation from Shingu, Japan, to be introduced to our city. And I want to pause the item that we had before oral communications to go ahead and move forward with that. And I'd like to see if Carol or...
So that was the end of oral communication, though she cut off one speaker, and they went for less than the 30-minute time that was supposed to be allowed for oral communication, and they shoveled everybody in, wedged them in to her schedule with this Japanese delegation, which was meeting outside. You know, no one seemed to be complaining. That, a few more minutes outside wouldn't have hurt them. And additionally, she cut off the time for speakers who were talking on the last truly important item on the agenda, item number 24 on the afternoon agenda, which was just eviction protections for tenants, which admittedly, though not terribly protective without enforcement processes and probably maybe the cause for a referendum and maybe a recall for council members, at least that was the threat, was something that had been promised by this city council. And it isn't so much that the mayor is the bad guy or bad gal, she is, in terms of her behavior here, but it's the progressives who refuse to make demands that the community be respected here, that the process be respected. That is what upset me and will continue to be something I raise my voice about. And now we're going to jump to Martin Luther King Day. You get to hear me wandering around in the parade, interviewing various people, making numerous complaints, and raising a few issues here and there. Enjoy. Apologize for the lack of music in this broadcast. I'm really under a time crunch here, and I can't get it in. So come back on Sunday, and perhaps there'll be some more tunes for you. Thanks for listening. Here's the Martin Luther King Day series of interviews and commentary by me. And actually, I'll just play the very end of the oral communications period.
So at this time, I want to acknowledge that at 7:30, we had already identified that we would be having our sister city's business delegation from Shingu, Japan, to be introduced to our city. And I want to pause the item that we had before oral communications to go ahead and move forward with that. And I'd like to see if Carol or Linda is here and we're ready to get going with welcoming them into our community.
Wait, you're postponing a vote after a second?
We have a 10-minute item to hear at 7:30 prior to this. Okay. And this is an opportunity for us to leave. Okay.
You're doing the right thing.
Okay.
That's weird.
That doing the right thing voice was Chris Krohn. I don't think that she is doing the right thing, but anyway, here's the Martin Luther King Day event, and enjoy. And actually, I think I misspoke. We're not going to get a lot of Martin Luther King Day events. We're going to get some, but there's a long section here which gives you some historical background from activist Tom Noddy, the Bubble Man's experiences living in an RV many years ago and the struggles he and others had with the rights of RV owners and folks living in their vehicles way back in the 70s.
The Martin Luther King Day rally, listening to the historical reminiscences of Uncle Tom Noddy, who has another name which I won't mention because, I don't. In any case, Tom, you said you ran into Martin, in 1968, it wasn't in a bar. It was. Where was it?
Well, actually, I didn't meet Martin Luther King, but I was going to Memphis State University at that time, and I had been part of some prior marches with the sanitation workers in town. But on the day of the big march, when Martin came to town to join the big march, it was a sanitation workers' strike that became a civil rights issue. The workers were all people of color, and the administration was white, and they wouldn't deal with that kind of union.
So and
they
wouldn't. How long have you been working with them?
Well, I was a student, so it was. And I was in SDS, and so we were doing anti-war marches, and we did some stuff with civil rights groups in town as well. There was kind of a division happening at that time between civil rights groups who welcomed white people as part of the in alliance, and some that preferred that
black power groups.
The Invaders was the black militant group in town. So anyway, and on the day of that march, I had to work. I was working at the dormitory where I lived with all the students. And then,
the assassination.
I was doing dishes when somebody leaned into that little window where the dishes come in and said, "Tom, they shot him."
Right. What happened with the sanitation strike after that whole thing? Did they win? Did they lose? Did you come back to help out again? Or did it all die with Uncle Martin Luther King?
The city and all of the many cities across the country, but certainly all the big southern cities, just went red with fire. I mean, people. In fact, it was supposed to be. It was early April, and the week after that was going to begin Easter break, and I was going to go visit family in North Carolina, near Charlotte. So I suddenly called because the university suddenly announced Easter break starts right now. leave town. And so, and if you had a student ID and you were on your way to an airport, a bus terminal, or a train station, then you could go through the military lines and the police lines to get to that place to get out of town. And so I did that. And then I took this this Greyhound bus, or could have been Trailways, through, and every one of these big cities all through the South on my way to Charlotte from Memphis was ablaze. You could just see, hey, big red glow in the air above every city. There was just, it suddenly turned red. And so there was a break for a while, then we came back for a while, and yeah, the strike itself, actually, I don't remember how that one settled out. I know it was chaos, and other matters were moved to the top. So I don't know. The city did eventually recognize that union, and that union got just to negotiate. I mean, that's what the question was. Would they even recognize their right to unionize, as Ted Hartley gives them the right to? But that administration wouldn't. Mayor Loeb.
Now, was that years later, months later, weeks later?
That they recognize? I don't know. It's only so much. My memory is pinpoint on some matters and really fuzzy on the other.
Follow the famous figures in the big fires, eh, Tom?
The big fires. And things as they looked where, you know, around me. I dropped out of college soon after and just put my thumb out, and it was like too much history. I was a history major in college, but history was happening on the streets, not in my classroom, so I left school and left Memphis.
Now, I introduced you to Alicia a few minutes ago, the woman who's been, you know, hassled or claims she's been hassled in her van.
This is in the city.
It was on Woodrow Avenue, out there near the circles. Or I'm not sure exactly where on Woodrow. But you yourself experienced this and advocated for people on this issue in the 70s. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
When did you first become aware of this kind of hassling? This is in the mid-70s, right?
Late 70s. So 1977 is when I came to town. And that winter is when they arrested a bunch of us. I had, when you ask about harassment. And so in the city, yeah, I was living in my van. And they started writing tickets for they called it illegal camping.
How long before they did that had you been living in your van in Santa Cruz in the city?
I came into town in June on my way to New Mexico, but the van broke down. Actually, it kind of broke down in Half Moon Bay, but it could still roll. So I'd heard of Santa Cruz, so I rolled it down to here, and then so that was in June. And the big bust was out at Scott Creek in December. But once I got to town, you know, the woman I was living with in the van, it was me and her and her son, 4 years old.
Loft.
Yeah. We actually checked it after we got a ticket over on Delaware Street.
Did that happen immediately or did it happen later?
It was a little while. You know, it was the thing is, the policy had been, until that time, for years, had been if complaints happened. And we had a puppet stage built on the curbside window. We had announced to all of our neighbors through hand-drawn flyers that we were here in the neighborhood to do a big puppet show 2 weeks from today.
Tom Noddy and the Traveling Puppets.
That's right. At the empty lot at such and such an address. So people didn't call in complaints. And then when we got a ticket, we were surprised because who complained? And we went to the check out the microfiche at the county building, and we discovered that the year before that there had been like 12 tickets given citywide. And the year before that it was single digits. 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 That year, as of September, when we got our ticket, 364 tickets had been given.
So you were really hassling those people on Delaware.
Yeah. So they had decided. It was just a police policy, no change in the law, but a police policy change from waiting for complaints to sweeping the town. They just went looking for the people in vans.
Now, was this the handiwork of the famous Chief Peeney?
Yeah, that's right.
Or was it somebody else in the department lower up?
Well, I assume the chief was. I mean, that's a big policy change. It's something that would generate a change from, you know, 12 tickets to 360 tickets. That's that has to be a policy
now,
change.
Wasn't there a liberal three women were on the city council here in Santa Cruz at that time?
No, it was still conservative, but the liberals had come in. But they didn't have the majority yet. They were about to.
Were they sympathetic when you went and said, what the heck? Or did you go to them and discuss the...
Yeah, we definitely went to them. No, they weren't all that sympathetic. The liberals have always had a hard time with homeless issues. They sometimes have some... what looks in the political world like extreme opinions and new ideas. But out in the real world... The class thing still works for them, and they don't, you know, they make a point once in a while to make it clear that, well, they're not that extreme. Of course, they're still going to stand up against these people who are invading this, and they use the same terms that the conservatives had used.
People living in their vehicles.
People living in their vehicles, people without vehicles, people, homeless people, who were not even yet called homeless. In those days, they were called them trolls, or the undesirable transient element, utes, U-T-E.
Bums, skunks, punks, and drunks.
You bet, all of that. In fact, homeless, actually, when it first happened, you know, that was Mitch Snyder.
I've seen it used many years ago.
Well,
too.
I mean, in that, yeah, it was used, but that's when it
became fashionable.
That's when the liberals picked it up, because Reagan was in charge. Mitch Snyder was fighting Reagan in D.C. and referred to them by a kinder name than street people. And
which brings us to the current situation, similar, because a lot of opposition to Trump, but not much opposition to Trumpism in Santa Cruz in terms of how poor people are treated. What are you pointing to?
And she had a megaphone, and he's stepping up. I don't know what that's about. Oh, never mind. Missing backpack.
So we have someone in the middle of the street who's announcing stuff to the crowd, which is still occupying the area in front of the library and in front of the Civic. But, Tom, go ahead. What's your sense of... I know you've primarily been interested, or, well, you've been involved with musicians in terms of street performers and their rights. But you have been around, as you say, for 30 years or more. It's actually 40 years now, if you go into the 70s. What do you see happening here in Santa Cruz? What do you hear from folks, if you hear anything, about how people in RVs, cars, et cetera, are being treated by police today?
I don't know. I hear mixed things. I talk to Brent. I hear from you. I see emails. I pick some people. I'm on lists where people let me know stuff. I'm not out there in the heartbeat hanging out downtown as I was for so many years. And as you say musicians, but actually I've never played music, so I did help organize.
Some of your bubbles as a form of visual music.
Yeah, there we go. We had the Santa Cruz Street Performers Guild, so there were performers.
Whatever happened to that Street Performers Guild, Tom?
Well, it continues to exist in the background, which was always the intent, by the way. Once we had formed the guild, we came up with voluntary guidelines for street performers. We got the city council and others to approve, downtown neighbors and others to approve that as the policy of the city about how to the performers' own voluntary guidelines. And then they abrogated that agreement.
In 2002.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But the guild, you know... We did a number of events, including that some of them generated money, and we had some additional monies, and we put it into the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union. That money is still there, waiting, in case the street performers are looking at some point for, what, a retainer for an attorney, or print up some flyers, or start an open mic, or... Anyway, you know full well that you and I have
what should people do who are hearing this broadcast, who are having street performer problems, do, and who are interested in this? Should they get in touch with you? Should they go online? Should they run downtown and start shouting, "Oh, Tom!" You know, Robert, what should they do?
Yeah, well, Robert, you're not a bad. I mean, you're pretty visible. So if people found you and you let me know that street performers are attempting to organize again, because the last several times that we made an effort and went out and dragged a number of people to a meetings that I set up.
A great benefit of event.
Yeah, no, those were successful and actually made some change. And so it happens periodically through the years. We have regathered, sometimes using money from that account in the credit union to pay for rentals or whatever we needed to generate the possibility of a return to an interest in the guild and the guidelines, or this, dealing with the council together or something. But the last few times that we've done it, it ended up not with street performers attending the meetings, but a few politicos like me and you without the performers, and that's
well,
absurd.
There was Safe Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression that did come out on the streets every Wednesday to challenge by their very presence the restrictive downtown ordinances.
Yeah, and then they stopped coming too. It was only me and you.
Well, it was about 6 years that they went for. You didn't
I don't mean on the streets. I mean at the meetings to gather them to see if they wanted to re-up and let them know we have the money in the credit union, do we want to do it? And a couple of politicos, like me and you, gathered and, you know, had other ideas about how to spend the money, but if we didn't have the endorsement of the street performers who were out there playing at that time, it didn't make sense for us to tap that account without the street performers calling for, let's do an open mic, let's make something that could benefit the performers in whatever form they want. I mean, they can be political, they can be non-political, there's money in the credit union. And it's still there. If the matter comes up again, they should try to find me because my name is on the account.
Let me ask you this. After skipping over the 1977 Scotts Valley busts and the 1977
Scott Creek.
Thank you. Scotts Creek Bluff. Scotts Valley is one of my favorite places. So.
Yeah.
Right. Scotts Creek Bluff arrests and also then the trial in that summer. Was there a change in policy toward RVs in Santa Cruz in 78 and 79? Park people in their vehicles.
You're saying skip over. So after we won the case.
Correct.
Some of the people listening won't know this much.
I'll tell you what. This has been on my program at least six times, over an hour each time. So
I know.
I'll refer you to that.
I know, but there have to be some people right now who are hearing this who went what? And so let me just very quickly say that in 1977, a bunch of us living in our vans ended up out of town because of the ticket blitz in the town. We ended up at the beaches, and then the sheriffs, separate from the police downtown in Santa Cruz, the sheriffs started busting the beaches, heading north, and when they finally got to Scott Creek Bluff at Christmas time, the people resisted leaving and took a bust, a big high publicity event, which led to a big high publicity trial downtown, and where we got on the stand and admitted everything. Yes, I did live in my van. Yes, I did do that. I cited the statute itself. I did. Parker used my mobile home recreational vehicle and or a travel trailer on any parcel of land in Santa Cruz County. I did do that. I plead not guilty.
And the jury flagrantly ignored the law, Tom. How can you account for that?
Well, see, there is a principle called jury nullification. Sometimes the jury looks at it and decides themselves whether there should be such a law. They found us not guilty.
But though they found you not guilty, which was, of course, a monumental case, the longest misdemeanor trial that I'd heard of in Santa Cruz County up to then, though we then doubled down on you and did the longest infraction trial, I guess it was 25 years later, for singing on the street. That was another story. What happened with people in their vehicles? Did they benefit from this, or was it all, as some claim, you were simply a publicity hound trying to climb a career on the backs of the homeless and the RV dwellers? I don't actually remember this being said by anybody, but I've heard this used sometimes with respect to activists.
With respect to what?
Activists.
Activists, yeah. I don't know anything about that. That it didn't seem like that for the longest time. I don't know. You know, at the time, it did not change the law. That's the thing. Jury nullification means a jury acquits people who, even in the cases like ours, where we admitted all of the instances. We did do it. We plead not guilty. They acquitted us. But that doesn't set a precedent, as people would like to think.
Did it change policy?
It alone did not change policy.
Policy continued.
Well, you know, that was a peak. That particular instance was the sheriff. Actually, there was a recall of the liberals going on the county board of supervisors. He wanted the publicity from that to feed the conservative, put the liberals into a position where they either had to support homeless people, who he called squatters, or they had to go against them. There was no good position for the people being recalled to stand.
And they lost the recall.
He was playing politics. Well, two of them lost, one of them won.
Right.
The one that won was the one in the district where we did this. So it's hard to read what the consequences of that were. But the sheriff was playing politics. So his policies didn't really much change.
How about in the city?
In the city actually, they did back off. It took 6 months to get into court. So we took this Christmas time bus. We ended up in court in June of 78. And during that interim, I was living in my van parking in town. And I let the light on late at night because I'm writing stuff for the lawyer. And I'm, you know, yeah. Well, they didn't at first. One cop wrote me a ticket. And then we had a case. And then we went into federal court to call on them to stop harassing us while we awaited trial. And the tow company paid us some money because they didn't want to be involved in this suit that we had going. And so we got some things. And the city kind of backed off and said, whoa, 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 whoa. This is a high, let the county deal with this.
Did
this
Keeney
show.
Apologize for that ticket?
I mean, no.
Did they stop beating up homeless people in Code Blue?
Oh, my God. Let me see. That they weren't yet doing that, and that came later.
Well, it was in the late 70s. I know that the trial was in the early 80s, but I think the beating.
No, the trial was in 78.
No, the trial of the police was in the early. Six police officers were accused of using Code Blue as a signal to gather and beat up homeless folks. They were fired from the police department and then tried, but acquitted.
Acquitted, absolutely.
But that was later, so.
Yes, that was after Skype Creek, so no. The city, I mean, there was no one big.
Hey, Wanda. Are you still hanging out with the NAACP?
I'm back. After 2 years, because I'm with them.
You look good to me, kiddo. Although that's my sexist view.
Everything else is related.
Look, I want to talk to you. You got a phone number these days?
Yeah.
Write it down on that piece of... Well, I believe it. There's so many Wanda Knights around, you know.
Oh, yeah. Conaway Knight.
So anyway, I'm sorry, Tom. I got to get inside. So quickly... Again, I'm looking to see if...
Take care.
You say the policies...
No, nobody based their policies on our having won the trial. They didn't care what the jury said. And who can say why the jury acquitted us? I can. I can say because they are the only ones that really saw all the details. They heard the testimony. They got what was going on. And so they acquitted us. But... You can't turn that into legislation because they could have acquitted us because they liked the girl with the blue eyes. You know,
sure.
You can't.
I mean, you did research, though, of the previous 3 years, 75, 76, 77, and years before to find out how many tickets were being issued. Did you ever do any subsequent follow-up research, 78 and 79, to see if the actual number of tickets dropped?
That would have been a good idea, Robert. That's a good idea. I wish you were political in those days. You weren't much. You were a guy hanging around downtown giving hugs.
No.
But that was a good idea.
I wouldn't have thought of it.
No, because I still cite this thing. I still tell people about. And then they up to the thing because there was a policy. But that.
Well, you can still do it. You can still go and check those records, Tom, if you wish.
Yeah, I probably could. I could do it from the comfort of home these days. Yeah, that's
a
good idea.
Although they may have eliminated the records. Police are so sometimes careless in keeping those things. Well, is there anything you want to say about this current Martin Luther Day King? I've been distributing a flyer saying who stole Martin Luther King Day because I believe it's fluff and puff and has very little to do with the kind of thing King was really interested in doing. It had to do with active resistance and raising tensions in order to expose the real conflicts and the real power mongers, the people who are engaging in the abuses against the poor and against, of course, African Americans.
Well, you know, I think that thing that you've noticed... That it's turned into a day off of work or school.
It always was in this town.
Yeah, it always was. All the holidays are. What did we do to celebrate the revolutionary George Washington on his birthday?
The white slave owner, that guy.
We got the day off.
Bought all the property and hoarded it for himself. That man, George Washington.
Or Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Mm-hmm. So we made silhouettes of them where we put them on the windows in school. Yeah. We didn't actually delve into the issues based on. But you're right. However, activists today across the country are using the opportunity to find each other downtown in the march where everybody else is there because it's the fluffy thing you're saying. But in fact, something's happening. This is not a bad idea to continue to celebrate this 60s activist and get the modern activists out in the streets together, finding each other and finding and recruiting these other people who are marching because, I don't know, it seemed like a good idea. And I know it's not a bad thing, though.
Well, I would say a Mumia Day would be better. Let's put it that way. A day involving somebody more current who actually is still working on this issue, not somebody who got shot and is gone. I mean, or if you're going to get somebody who got shot, you can pick any number of people whose names we have never heard of who are who got less publicity than King, but did as much, if not more, in terms of their actual organizing abilities and standing up to power.
That's a reductionist view. So you think Martin Luther King's central moment of his life was when he got shot?
No, but I think that's why. That's how
James, that was James Earl Ray's
death. That's how he's characterized.
That's how he's characterized.
People aren't remembering the organizing. They're not talking about the victories. They're talking about, you know, the...
I don't know. I see them playing the I had a dream.
They are talking.
And then the masses of people out in the streets and the chains.
Walking for 3 hours and going home and then supporting the same politicians that are doing the things King would never have supported.
I'm talking about masses of people out in the streets in 1966 and the Poor People's March to Washington and King turning the civil rights movement into part of the anti-war movement and King... There was a lot to his life.
He was trying.
Yeah, you bet. He was trying.
What I'm saying is that I would like to see people who are more recently, you know, people who confront guys like the guy dressed in blue behind us, who's armed and puffy there.
Confronting.
Yeah, I confront in the sense of confront the injustices that this department is refusing to address. Here's this little table is about that. People in RVs and vehicles, according to this woman here, who could be a liar, but I don't think so. It could be an isolated instance. Are you a liar? Have you been lying about your thing, Alicia?
Oh, no, and there are hundreds of stories. There are no isolated incidents of harassment around here.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's our police walking by right now. Maybe he'll... Thomas, I want to thank you for... Thomas. I'll call you Tom for short.
Oh, okay. Tom's better.
Anything you want to conclude with? You want to just get out?
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you're still doing what you do, Robert. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Cheers, Tom.
I wish it was an isolated incident.
So how many more instances have you heard with all this publicity, Alicia, in the paper about your own case of being harassed by the police or neighbors or and then not being able to really get any real good information or assurances from them? Have people come to either talk about what's happened to them? And if so, how many people would you say you've gotten reports from? You say hundreds. I doubt that, frankly. But
no, I wouldn't say hundreds. I would say I've had at least 10 to 15 people tell me numerous horror stories of harassment. Several really, really terrible stories, too, of assaults, all kinds of different things. I wish I could say that I'm expecting immediate change. After my article, there were a bunch of really, really nasty comments. I thought I would get a little more support from the community, but actually it was more like, you know, take your tin can and get out of here, which is the problem around here.
So how many would you estimate actually contacted you? Or you run into and spoken
to? Well, yeah, I pretty much have spoken to them, run into them, have kind of gone out and talking to them. So... And I feel real bad for Veronica. I'm going to be reaching out to Veronica again soon because she's got all those tickets, and I want to make sure she's okay.
Who are you?
I'm Robert. Who are you?
I'm Aslan.
No, yeah, then you run away. All right, well, as long as you don't run away. Go ahead.
Oh, that was it, really. I mean, I'm just hoping for some really solid change around here. I'm advocating for myself, not just for myself, though, but for a lot of other people. The homeless here are getting ignored.
And I would say abused insofar as they're being hassled for their vans. Is this your response? Who is this person?
This is the youngest rebel you've ever met.
What is your name, sir, with your no human being is illegal t-shirt?
Just a little return to the airwaves with Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo.
I is having deserted furry leftist to flounder without you.
I'm raising the next generation of revolutionaries and had to cut back on certain extracurricular activities. So, yes, pardon my absence from my fair airwaves.
And who is this little creature here?
This is the youngest rebel you've ever met.
And his name is?
Something.
Something. How do you do something? It says best kid ever on his hat.
That's true. He is the best kid ever.
What do you think of this Martin Luther King Day hoop-de-doo?
Well, I don't know if it's March for the Dream as much as it's Parade for the Police, but...
Oh, come.
But I think, you know, MLK would encourage us to make coalitions of all different kinds. And
I hear the Klan has got some openings.
I don't think that they have any openings on the police force for the Klan, thankfully. But at the same time, there are tons of problems with our local police department. And as fabulous as this is, it doesn't make up for day in and day out continued institutional harassment of poor people, people of color, other marginalized folks that like exist within this rotten ass system. So, I mean, as much as the police want to use this as a PR, situation.
And do use it as a PR.
Well, obviously, I mean, that's what this whole thing is. Justice, equality, love. That's like a real nice sentiment. But is that what I'm seeing from officers' behavior on a regular? I don't think so.
Practice what you preach.
Yes. Now, have you two met? This is Alicia, by the way. Alicia the Sandino.
Nice to meet you.
And Alicia is concerned about this issue.
Everything you just said.
She's being hassled in her van. And she
I just read.
That's her.
I read. Okay, sure.
That's me.
Cool, right?
Or yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I read. Read the Indie Bay thing and the Senile article about it. And yeah, I mean, my own two cents is, you know, as you've said many times, Robert, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And especially when you're within your legal rights to be somewhere, it's really sad that some folks have to go out of their way to be bigoted and attack folks that are literally just trying to survive with their families in what is the most expensive rental market and housing market probably in the country. And if not in like the most, it's certainly in the top five.
Are you living in Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
So you can still afford it.
I'm lucky enough to have had help from my parents and my wife's parents. And, yeah, we are actually even homeowners living the freaking dream. But it wasn't cheap and it wasn't easy. And it's not something that's, like, there for everyone, you know. And it's that's as long as that's the reality that not anyone and everyone can afford to be where they want to be and do what they want to do, we need to take steps to, like, address that. And I think
I don't have family. I don't have family or anything like that to help me. Yeah. And so that's the thing. A lot of people, and I'm glad that you have such a great attitude and they're still fighting for what's right, because a lot of people who do get a house forget about everybody else and think, you know, they're at the top now and nobody else counts.
Let me ask you, Sandino, have you had any experience with people in vehicles recently or even in your neighborhood? I mean, what do you do when you find a person living in an RV or a vehicle near you, or has that happened?
There's been a couple of folks in my neighborhood where they have friends who live on the street, and those friends let them park on, you know, in front of their house and use their restroom and, you know, share visiting, you know, privileges or whatever. Like, I think it's great when people can make those kind of situations and arrangements work, and I don't care. As long as those folks...
Does that bother you the way that it bothers some other people around here?
That's just an expression of bigotry and folks really feeling kind of this extreme classism and classist kind of attitude towards, you know, humans trying to survive. And that's, like, you're not my enemy because you're in an RV or, like, whatever. You know, like, that's really sad that someone would have that kind of mind state. And, you know, as it's clear that there's not enough social services for everyone and there's not enough housing for everyone, like, why would we...
Yes. Have you ever been confronted with a situation where you have someone parked nearby that you don't want there, and what do you do about it?
I used to manage, you know, a little piece of property for my former employer and whatnot. We had folks that would come through and camp every now and then. And for me, as long as folks are clean and respectful, like, I don't really have an issue. I definitely don't put up with, you know, disrespectful, kind of like outright rude, disruptful kind of behavior. If, you know, I'm kind of an outdoor wilderness sort of guy. Leave no trace, right?
Yes.
Leave no trace. If you leave no trace, I don't really have an issue with you. And as long as we can have that mutual understanding and respect, I don't go out of my way to harass.
How frequently has that happened? How often have you actually had that situation, either the positive or the negative?
It is 50-50. Everyone's an individual. You know, I don't want to say because they're unhoused they're going to act one way or another, but, you know, I think if you come towards the situation with respect, like for me as like the homeowner, if I'm coming to someone who I see in a more vulnerable position than myself, like I try and be respectful and like calm about it. I don't run up being like, get out of here. How you start an interaction is super important to how it ends up.
Let's say how long have you been in your house?
Like the one I live in now?
Yeah.
A couple years.
And during that period of time, have you ever had the experience of some people parking nearby who are living in their vehicles?
Yes, I just said that.
And how many times has that happened with this?
I don't know, a couple times.
And is it generally been positive, negative, neutral?
Everyone's been chill so far.
And so I'm trying to get people's experiences. That's why I asked that question.
Yeah, no, I haven't had any problems with folks like that, like causing a ruckus or anything. Yeah.
Anything you want to say about events coming up that you think people should know about for free radio?
I'm so out of the loop. I would just, you know, I'm scaled back a lot of my activism at the moment, but I do think, you know, staying continually involved is important. So in that regard, I still work with the Resource Center for Nonviolence and encourage folks to check out what we're doing, because we're trying to build a movement for social, racial, economic, environmental justice here in Santa Cruz. And, you know, I would just encourage people to check out rcnv.org, find us on the social medias if that's your thing. And, yeah, you know, just hail Uncle Dennis.
I remember Uncle Dennis.
We love him.
And we've been talking with?
Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo.
The only. Thank you, Sandino.
El único. Thank you, Augusto, or Roberto.
Mucho gusto, señor.
Cheers, Alicia.
Oh,
pleasure to meet you. Yeah, yeah.
You.
Good luck with your struggle. And, you know, we're not all like that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I know that. I do. You know, it's funny, just an observation. The police seem like the happiest people here at this event.
I just wanted to point that out. At the front of the Civic, come out of the event, Martin Luther King event indoors. It's about 5 after noon. And as I walked by, I was accosted by this, what do we call this vehicle?
I would be a pedicab operator.
You are, and this is your pedicab, complete with...
I rent it from the company, Rainbow Rickshaw. Permitted in the city of Santa Cruz, all that jazz.
Is there only one company that's permitted, or
they have two companies based in Santa Cruz? Santa Cruz Pedicab and Rainbow Rickshaw.
And are they reasonable in their rents to you?
Yes, actually, yeah. It's a very fair deal. I have both companies have very fair bosses who go out of their way to be helpful and to be of service when called upon. And are very good about being responsive and doing their part for the rent that you pay them, basically.
How long do you have to work, let's say, to make rental? Are you indoors or outdoors, I should ask, as a person who rents for housing?
As a person, could you please repeat?
In other words, are you living indoors?
Yes, I am.
And how long do you have to work doing this kind of work to, how many hours to pay the rent? For your apartment, your room, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I got you. I'd say about 30-something hours. 30 to 35 is what would be my wild guess off the top of my head.
Per month?
30 to 35 hours of work to pay for a month's rent in my particular case, yes.
And is that because you have an unusually kind and reasonable landlord, or because you get a lot of big tips? Or I'm just wondering, the average working person in Santa Cruz, I have no idea what the truth is. I'm wondering how long they have to work to pay for their rent, and how that works with different professions here.
Right.
I have no expertise, but perhaps you would know more about it just out of the blue.
Yeah, I feel fortunate to have this gig. This is, for me personally, I've always been a bicycle-based worker. Most of my life, I haven't made very much, actually. I recently moved, right over a year ago, I moved from Louisiana and Austin, is where I lived most of my whole life. And I've always been a bicycle-based worker. Pedicabs are a whole other level. I just started driving pedicabs as of last year in Santa Cruz and the year before in Austin. And it's helped out a whole lot with my income.